As was indicated in my introduction, I'm a criminal practitioner, and it dawns on me that we're in a public forum, and I thought I'd start out by explaining the specifics about how legal aid works if in a criminal context. I'm not a family practitioner, I won't pretend to be one, but basically what I'm going to tell you about how legal aid works, it would be similar in the family law context. First of all, it's important to understand there's a few lawyers that work for legal aid and provide legal aid services through the organization, our employees, and they're also lawyers. I'm not one of those. I'm a private lawyer who happens to take legal aid referrals. So if you came to me for a problem, charged with a criminal offense, I would ask you, one of the questions I would ask you is, do you intend to pay me privately, or are you not able to, and do you qualify for legal aid? And then if you did qualify for legal aid, I would accept the referral, and we'd go from there, and I'd be paid through Legal Services Society. First thing to understand is not everybody qualifies. There's two fundamental criteria. One is you have to fall below a certain income requirement, and the other one is you have to be seeking, the Crown has to be seeking a jail sentence, at least in the criminal context. If the Crown's not seeking a jail sentence, you will not qualify for legal aid. And that is really problem number one. And of course, that's a way to limit the number of people who qualify. But the difficulty and the challenges that represents for many of my clients is the effects of a criminal record today in a digital era where we have databases, where we keep track of everything and anything, is actually more significant than it was 20 or 30 years ago, where maybe your criminal record wouldn't pop up in every single situation where you might not want a future employer to know what you did when you were 18 or 19 years of age and some of the mistakes that you made. That's now going to pop up in this digital era forever. So I say, actually, as the nature of records becomes more accessible, the need and the importance of having proper legal representation doesn't start with whether or not you are facing a jail sentence. It starts with whether or not you're facing the stigma of a criminal record and the effects that that can have on the rest of your life. I don't pretend to know what the criteria are in the family law context, but I do know that certainly income requirement is one of the criteria there. The other thing to keep in mind, and I'll dispel anybody of any myths that you might have about what it's like to work on a legal aid file. Often I have clients in legal aid context who are mentally ill. That's just the nature of the practice. It's not always the case, but it's often the case, sometimes the case. And I can assure you it's a no-frills defense. I often have a client who will say to me, well, we need to hire a private investigator, and then that private investigator can go out and do the work that the police failed to do, and we'll get to the bottom of this. And I have to patiently explain to people, I'm your private investigator, I'm it. There's no frills here. We're not going to get disbursements from legal aid. They're not going to cover these kinds of things. And it's you and me against me and my client against the powers of the state, who of course are supplied with the powers of the police, who can go and investigate matters. And frankly, from what I can see, greater resources, not unlimited resources, but greater resources to come to bear on a prosecution than certainly what I have available to defend on a prosecution. And then if I accept the referral on legal aid, just to describe a little bit about how that works, it basically works in terms of the billing. It basically works the same way your doctor bills MSP. So you go for your annual checkup, and your doctor, your family doctor's entitled to bill a certain rate for that 1 hour that he spends with you. If it's a drop-in checkout, he bills at a different amount. It's basically the same thing with me. If you were in jail and the Crown was seeking your detention, and I had to do a bail hearing, I would bill out at a certain rate on that bail hearing. It's all fixed on a tariff. And it fluctuates a little bit depending on whether or not you're charged with a significant offense or a less significant offense. Larger cases that span several days that are going to take up more court time work on a slightly different system. There we write to legal aid and we say, this is the amount of hours that we need to prepare the file, and these are the amount of days that it's going to take to do it, and so on and so forth. And we set a budget, and legal aid sends me back a letter saying, this is your budget, you're going to get 100 hours or 50 hours or whatever it is for your prep time. And then I would bill that at an hourly rate. The current hourly rate for a criminal tariff file on what we call SCAP is $83.90 an hour. To put that into some perspective, as you learned in the introduction, when I was at Bullhauser and Tupper, as an articling student, my rate was $125 an hour as an articling student. It was more than what I can bill legal services at now. And at one meeting that I attended, we had a debate and a discussion about why we couldn't compete, how we couldn't compete with another group of insurance defense lawyers who were charging out at $180 an hour. And we couldn't possibly do the work at that low of rates. $180 an hour to me sounds pretty good, but in any event, that's sort of the context in which it all works. The other aspect of my practice that I do is duty counsel, so that is where I'm assigned to attend to the courthouse, and those people who don't qualify for legal aid can come in and sit with me, and I'll discuss their case with them and give them some advice. I have noticed over the 6-8 years that I've been doing criminal defense and duty counsel work that the number of people who seem not to be qualifying for legal aid seems to be increasing. They're faced with significant, as I say, offenses, criminal offenses. They're concerned about the stigma of a criminal record, and they do not qualify for any kind of legal representation. There's a couple of pro bono services that I can refer them to. One of them is through the UBC Law Students Clinic, but again, you're going to get representation through a law student, not through a lawyer. And it seems to be increasing as time goes by. The concern and the effect for me as a practitioner about what I see happening in terms of legal aid and how it's becoming more restrictive is really twofold. One concern that I have is that those lawyers who are the stars of the profession will not stay and do criminal defense work. They are going to go off and get more lucrative jobs in private practice and in civil work. And I think that's a shame. And that's not just a bad thing for the criminal bar, for the criminal defense bar. I think it's a bad thing for the justice system generally, and I think it's a bad thing for the public. We want the best lawyers working variety. We don't expect to have necessarily all the same amount of good lawyers doing criminal defense work, because frankly it doesn't pay as much, and you can go get paid better doing civil work. But there is going to be, over time, bleeding out of the stars of the profession. They're not going to stay and continue to do criminal defense work, which is unfortunate. The other area that we're seeing some serious problems with respect to legal aid is on major cases, including murder cases, where when I started and really where I learned my trade was junioring senior lawyers on murder cases and more serious cases. And what you're seeing now is budget restraints from legal aid where it was almost automatic when I started. You'd write your budget proposal and you'd be assigned junior counsel. Now that's not the case. Now it's generally, it's assumed that you're going to be doing the case on your own. And unless you can convince legal aid that there's somehow exceptional circumstances, I think, the exceptional circumstances when you're facing significant offenses is that your client could face a life sentence in jail. That's enough to justify junior counsel, in my view. But that's not the case, then that's not the way they view it, and the budget restraints have become more significant over time. And of course, that's a problem, because then the quality of the representation and the challenges with respect to the representation becomes more significant. So, Birgit's going to talk, I hope, a little bit about what's been happening with the budget over the last 20 years. Let me tell you a little bit about what the bar is doing about all of this. Back in September of 2011, we called a meeting. I'm a member of what's called the Legal Aid Action Committee, which is a subcommittee of a group of called the Trial Lawyers Association of British Columbia, which Birgit and I are both members of. And a member meeting was called back in September of 2011 to discuss the state of legal aid amongst the bar, and mostly with respect to criminal defense counsel, but not exclusively. There was lots of turnout from the family bar, and some civil practitioners as well. And what we wanted to canvass was whether or not there was an appetite to do anything about the state of legal aid in the province of British Columbia, and it turned out that there was. So the first thing that we did was, starting in January of 2012, we started withdrawing duty counsel services. So we would agree that we would not attend to do duty counsel, both in custody and out of custody duty counsel. We started that in January of 2012, doing 1 week. We stepped up to 2 weeks in February, 3 weeks in March, and 4 weeks in April. And we had mixed successes with that. One of the challenges that we face is that we are all, as I say, private members. You can agree to join or not join if just because one lawyer says, I'm not going to agree to do legal aid services, provide legal services, doesn't mean that another lawyer can make another decision and do it. And in fact, what we had was we had replacements come in and do those duty counsel services in some of the jurisdictions, not all of them, but in some of them. So the lesson that we learned from the withdrawal of duty counsel services in 2012 was that it's of mixed results, and in some of the jurisdictions they were replaced. Following that, we had a collective decision amongst most members not to take any of the riot cases following the Stanley Cup riots that occurred. We wouldn't take any of those cases on legal aid. And again, people don't have to participate in that. Others could choose to do it if they wanted. And also, we then stepped that up to include no criminal harassment charges. And then more recently, what's been proposed and what we're touring around the province to various different lawyers is the idea that we're going to do weekly blackout rates, blackout periods. So in July of this year, the criminal defense bar that practices primarily out of 222 Main Street agreed that we would not attend for the month of July. We took extended holidays, and we just would not go in and do anything, the idea being to slow the system down if possible and cause problems and get the government's attention. And you may have seen some of the media reports that came out of that. I hope you did. However, the challenge, of course, is not showing up for work for a month costs everybody money. In fact, it costs everybody too much money. And so the appetite to follow through with that length of withdrawal is simply not there because people can't financially afford it, understandably so. So what we're doing now, starting in October, is 1 week a month on the first week, starting the Monday of the first week, week of the month, we're going to do weekly blackout periods. So we will not be setting matters down for trial in that first week. We will not be attending to, if the file is for resolution by way of guilty plea or some other resolution, we will not be resolving it in the week during that blackout period. And unless it's an emergency situation where your client's absolutely insisting on a bail hearing, we're also not going to do bail hearings in that period of time, which means people will sit in jail for the week.